Boy George joins me from a studio in London, England. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Well, it's a great pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
So that song, King of Everything, it's a very interesting choice for a first single. In the lyrics, there's this combination of self-awareness and contrition and perspective. It's as though you are speaking directly to the world about the way you see yourself right now. Does that description resonate for you?
No. Not at all. I mean, that's a kind of literal translation of the song, but no song is literal. I mean, you start writing a song, but you have to remember it's going to be a song. So it's not a documentary. You know, it's not a four-hour film. It's a time capsule. So I would say that there's a bit of me in there, but then there's a bit of everyone in there. It's a song about reclaiming your kind of life, you know, and in that respect, it can apply to me and to almost every other human being that's had any kind of problems in their life, which I think most people have.
But when you sing in that song very powerfully, "Have I lost my crown or will I begin again?" It almost feels
king
like...
King again. Will I be king again?
Will I be... That's right. Sorry. Will I begin again? Be king again? With each new thing you do, George, and I mean, there have been many, does it feel like you're always starting over, trying to prove yourself again?
No, I think at the moment it feels like I'm getting a chance to repaint the picture I have of myself and also the picture that other people have of me. I mean, I feel, you know, particularly now in the last kind of couple of years since I made this record, you know, I've got new management, everything has changed in my life, and I'm working with people who can see in the future rather than the past. Then, you know, I do feel like it's a new beginning of sorts, but every day is a new beginning.
In the video for that song, you're in a boxing gym, singing in the center of the ring. Is there a personal connection to that place?
Well, my dad was a boxer, and there's boxing in my family, so it's something that I grew up with. And in fact, that place that we filmed in is a gym that my dad used to go to, so it's a local gym where I grew up. So in a way, it was kind of going back to my childhood, which the record is also, you know, about going back to kind of the 70s in particular, which is the decade where I kind of first fell in love with music. And a lot of the sounds on this record are direct, you know, references to the 70s, you know, obviously glam rock, reggae, a little bit of punk and Bowie. It's all in there, you know.
Take me back to those early years in South London. This is not a time or place where it would have been easy to be overtly androgynous in the 70s and 80s, even after Bowie broke the mold. At what point growing up did you realize, George, music would allow you to outwardly become the person you wanted to be?
I would say that around about 11 years old was when I first saw my first Bowie concert, which was Ziggy Stardust at Lewisham Odeon. And it was just before my 12th birthday. I don't know how I got my parents to allow me to go to that gig, but I did. And I went on my own. Can you imagine?
Wow.
And for me, it was a kind of life-changing experience. And in fact, I've never quite been able to enjoy a gig as much since, really. I mean, it was a bit of a shame. It was the first thing I ever saw, you know, but... you know, I already knew about Bowie, so when I heard that he was coming to town, you know, I made sure that I got myself a ticket. And, you know, and that was really the beginning of me kind of thinking, not about being a musician, because I never thought that it was possible at that point, but certainly was the beginning of me thinking, oh, my God, I'm not the only one that's a bit different. And there are others out there like me. And I was quite sure that I was going to become friends with Bowie and, you know, share his kind of bohemian lifestyle.
Once you made that choice, you're this kid, to champion that androgynous look, the makeup, the hair, what was the reaction from the people closest to you at the time?
Horror. Absolute horror. I mean, I look back now and I think, you know, if this at this point in my life, if I knew that sort of going out in a certain outfit was going to get me punched, I'd probably think twice about it now. But when I was 19, I was just so kind of belligerent in a way. I just thought, you know, no one has the right to tell me what to do. I had a real issue with authority because of my dad was quite an authoritarian, and then a school and, you know, trying to sort of work for people as well. That was also quite awful for me. So I grew up with the sort of loathing of authority. So I wasn't really interested in what anyone else thought about how I looked. And I just kind of And I did my thing and took the punches, basically, because I did get hit quite a lot.
Well, you formed Culture Club in your early 20s, and this is an important band for many reasons. I mean, musically you had the hits, but one of the most powerful aspects was your public persona as someone blurring the gender boundaries and in an era of AIDS becoming a reality as well. Apart from the creative choices you were making, did you intentionally want to be someone breaking ground in terms of the way the general public thinks about gender?
Well, I came from the kind of, you know, sort of British tribal sort of fashion culture, you know, Bowie, punk rock, and then what was called the New Romantics. So I'd grown up in a decade where, you know, we'd had things like, you know, skinheads, mods and rockers. It was kind of part of the British tradition that when you were a teenager, you kind of joined one group or another. And through the 70s, I kind of went from kind of glam rock to punk rock and then to what was called New Romanticism. But it was really all Bowie's fault. I mean, he was the one that started, he opened that Pandora's box.
But how much was this? I mean, there wasn't anything overtly political about Culture Club in terms of the lyrics, but did you see yourself as political in any way?
I think in a way, you know, the most political thing you can do is be yourself, you know, and I suppose as a young man, I wasn't really conscious of, I was conscious of the effect that I had on people. Do you know what I mean? I saw it when I met people, obviously, when I met Johnny Carson, when I went and met lots of different people, they would react to me because, you know, I suppose when they met me, they realized that it wasn't just somebody that was putting on some outrageous clothes for the stage. They realized that I was like the real deal. And I think that kind of really disconcerted people. But that was part of the fun, you know.
Let me come back to this first single, The King of Everything. This album, I know it's out in the UK. It's about to come out here. I know you say you don't want me to be too didactic about the lyrics or prescriptive, but there's what sounds like this contrition. You say you're sorry almost for thinking at one time in your life that self-destruction was so cool. Mm. Looking back, George, were the addiction issues you suffered, heroin in particular, somehow related to some kind of romantic notion of self-abuse?
No, I don't think so. I think, it's a difficult question to answer because, you know, why do people become addicts? You know, I think a lot of it is just because it's available, you know, and when you get famous, you know, you're around other people that are doing it. And sometimes it's just proximity more than anything else. You know, it's peer pressure. It's, you know, you want to kind of fit in and be cool. And, you know, if you're lucky, if you can sort of take it or leave it, there are a lot of people who can kind of do it and walk away from it. But a lot of people discover very quickly that they can't do that. And I guess that's when you know you're an addict, you know, and that's the difference.
Well, what does self-destruction as cool mean to you?
Well, what I'm saying is that, you know, there's that kind of rock and roll notion of, you know, doing drugs and hard living is cool, you know, but when you get caught up in that and right. It becomes a kind of a sort of prison, then that's a different story. Then it's not so cool.
Well, prison is something that you've experienced literally. I mentioned this is your first full album in 19 years. Was it a difficult decision for you to return so boldly to the public spotlight, knowing that you would have to face questions about your past?
Well, I don't think I do have to face questions about my past. And, you know, it's really down to whoever's talking to me. You know, they can ask me what they want. That doesn't mean I'm going to give them an answer. Mm. You know, I don't live in the past. I live in the now. And, you know, it's not important for people to kind of question me about my past. That's not what I do. I'm a musician. I'm not a politician.
But you know,
I'm not running a third world country. But, I'm not Putin.
But you know? That you're a celebrity. You're a name around the world, and that you've been involved in a lot. And people are gonna. So you raised a lot of eyebrows last month when you attended the Brit Awards, right? Sporting a fake bruise over your eye. This was. I mean, some thought this was in really bad taste because of the 2007 conviction for false imprisonment, in which you were involved in the beating and handcuffing of a Norwegian model.
Well, that's what. Hold on a second. Yeah. Okay, that is what has been put in the paper, but that doesn't mean it's true. And I'm not here to talk about that. So if you're going to carry on down that line, then obviously we won't.
No,
but if you want to talk about my record, great. That's what I'm here to talk about.
Were you surprised by all the reaction that this Brit Awards appearance got?
Well, I didn't really notice much of a reaction. Some people liked it and some people didn't, you know. It's got nothing to do with my past. That's just like such a journalistic way of looking at it, you know. Mm. you know, it's very lame for everyone to kind of pick up on everything I do and relate it to my past, you know. Sorry, I've moved on. Get over it. I have.
Getting back to this first single then. You also ask where you stand now with the ones you love in the King of Everything. I mean, judging by the positive response this album is getting, it would appear the question's been answered. How do you answer it in relation to yourself? How do you feel about yourself these days?
Well, generally, when people ask me nice questions, I feel great.
Did you think that was not a nice question? I mean,
What I'm going to say is, okay. I think it's a little bit cheeky of you to ask me about that because it's got nothing to do with you. It's got nothing
but
to do with you.
George, I totally accept what you're saying. But at the same time, this week, The Independent is writing about this, right?
So I don't care what they wrote about it. What they did was they went on my Twitter account and they read something I wrote as a joke about Air Italia and they made it into a story as a way of attacking me again, you know? And the thing is, the bottom line is this, right? I live in what I call, what I think is a civilized country, okay? Mm-hmm. I went to prison. Therefore, I have been rehabilitated and now I want to get on with my life. Okay? So being asked questions about my past mm-hmm. is, I feel, very unfair. I have paid for what I did. End of story.
All right. Well, I certainly didn't mean to.
Well, of course you did. You must have known. What do you think I was going to, you know?
No, I was asking about the Brit Awards, which happened last month. I mean, it's not years ago. This is, but I accept that I'm really impressed with your record. And I want to talk about that too. I mean, I want to talk about everything about you. You know,
the thing is, you know, just because something's written in a newspaper, it doesn't mean that it's true. You know, and the important thing, you know, when I was on trial, I didn't give evidence, and I'm not going to do it now.
Right.
Okay, although, so that doesn't mean that what you read about me is the truth.
No,
okay?
But sometimes it's great to hear the person tell
and
it.
You know, one of the great things in my life is that I have a lot of people that love me, people that I don't even know that love me and give me so much support. And, you know, sometimes that's overwhelming, but thank God for those people. Hmm. Thank God for those people.
I wanted to go out on that's the second single. It's a song called My God. Can I ask you about that?
You can ask me about anything.
Apparently, can I?
Well, no, you know
what you're saying.
Hold on a second. You're a grown man. You're not a child. You know that if you go into that area, you know, you're going to upset me. So don't pretend that you don't know what you're doing.
Actually,
I'm 52 years old. You know?
I did not know that. I honestly.
Well, what do you think?
There's a lot of situations where if I ask about something like that, it gives the opportunity for the interviewee to then say, yeah, you know what? This is my position on that. And you know.
Oh, you know what? Having your say is really overrated, you know. And I really. One thing I have learned as I've got older is less is more. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, I used to think that everything I said was interesting, and I used to think that I had to say everything I thought. And at 52, I now know that that's not the case, okay? Not everything I say is interesting, and not everything that you ask me is important for me to answer, you know?
Absolutely. You're welcome to not answer some of what I'm asking. And now I'm going to ask you about My God. You say, here in the darkness, I became the light. I had to get it wrong to get it right. That's profound. Is that a microcosm of the Boy George story?
Well, I think, you know, what you're looking at, my songs and you're almost kind of saying that I'm apologizing, which I'm
Well, you
not.
Wrote these lyrics. What do you want me to ask you about?
But that's not an apology. Who do you think I need to apologize to? You?
No, that's not an apology. I had to get it wrong to get it right.
The only person I need to apologize is my mum, which I've done. That's the only person I've ever had to apologize to is my little mum, and I've done that. You know, the song is about an incident that happened to me in New York. I was in a bar in New York, and a guy walked up to me, gave me a Jesus pamphlet, and I was kind of affronted. I was like, "Why are you giving me this? You know, what do you think? Why do you think I need this?" And you know, it kind of stuck in my mind. And then you know, I wanted to write a song about New York. You know, my experiences in New York. And, you know, My God is kind of, for me, it's a celebration of faith, actually, quite the opposite. It's saying if you have God in your heart, then you should be the nicest person on earth. Do you have God in your heart?
I'm not sure.
There's a problem.
but strangely enough, the lyric that you dismissed as not being that I had to get it wrong to get it right is actually something I really relate to.
I didn't dismiss it, but, you know... I'm just worried that you're going to try and use it as an reason to go back over something else.
Because I asked you one question about the Brit Awards. Come on, I've overtly talked about how I'm a fan of this record. Let me end on this because it's
a very public radio interview. I have to say, I've done a couple of those in America, so it isn't that much of a surprise to me. I was kind of expecting it.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you get a bit factual. You can't help yourself.
Well, I'll stand by that, being factual.
That's okay.
I genuinely have enjoyed our banter, and I
enjoyed some of it.
You've made it very clear which parts you didn't enjoy. But thank you for doing this.
And well, I talked earlier about how important it was to be myself, and I hope you'd expect no less.
Absolutely.
Than that.
Absolutely. Okay. Congratulations on the new record.
Thank you. Satnam.
Bye-bye. Boy George, his new album is called This Is What I Do. It is out next week. Boy George will be touring across North America. He'll be in Boston, New York, Toronto, Chicago. Go to Boy George UK for more details. We reached Boy George in a studio in London, England.